All right, okay. Two things. One, I have sent the class an email about changing. Is it too loud? Is it too loud if I speak like this?
No.
No? Okay. I have sent an email to the class asking if you want me to change the tutorial times, because I see I'm competing with so many other people, so many other tutorials and this and that and everything. Then two people responded, one in person, one by an email, asking me that it is all right, they like to change it to 3 to 4. So because the others didn't respond, I'm going to, you know, go with the two people who told me they like me to have the tutorial 3 to 4. Now, others who did not respond and who don't come to tutorial, I don't think you should say anything about these two people, because they want to come 3 to 4. So I'm going to accommodate them. And so that means 5 to 6, Tuesdays 5 to 6 tutorial will not be there, unless you oppose it right now.
Three to four
on Tuesday. Two people have told me that, and so I've never seen you in tutorial. And that those people who don't come to tutorial, and then why would you want to oppose these two people? At least they want to come. And they want to get their questions cleared. And yes. Pardon me? All Tuesdays.
Just Tuesday or Tuesday and Thursday?
Oh, Tuesday and Thursday. Thursday, part I didn't hear. I should get a hearing check. Thursday. Thursday it is 4 to 6. Why I have it 4 to 6 is because I know histology starts at 5. And physiology, you are out of physiology by 4. And so 4 to 5, so many people can come. And 5 to 6, those people who are half the class who are not in physiology that day, and those about 25 people who took histology in the summer. See, that's how I have it, you know, planned for 4 to 6 on Thursday, where most people are able to come. So Thursdays, I'm going to keep it, but remember, as I said before, Thursdays, 4 to 4:30, we are in room 78, because of some nutrition class, and let them be. Okay, they are good department, let them be. So, but, you know, so, and now, then 4:30 to 6, I will be in room 76 as before. Tuesdays 3 to 4, because I have not been able to, because they just told me, one of them told me yesterday about the 3 to 4 deal. I haven't had a chance to get a room. So I will be in my office. I can accommodate about 4 or 5 people in my office. You know, so there are chairs, you know, we can pull in and things like that. Let me see. And I'm sending a sign-up sheet for the case study, which I'll be receiving on Thursday. Why I keep a sign-up sheet is, things happen, sometimes people don't print the names, sometimes only one name, so I have a record. See, Living Anatomy, I keep a record of who did with whom, you know, in Living Anatomy. So when things happen, I really use that. I've already used it once, you know, this quarter. So that's why I keep track of who is working with whom. That's important for me to know. Okay, and that means that I know who is talking to whom. And so that is here. Let's go. And I see a lot of people were very happy with Kimberly's presentation. Kimberly, you know, Sandstrom. And that is good. We can have a few more like that as we go along. But if you want a few more like that, what can happen is we can have a few more of those, and then you have to read those things that are in the outline. Okay? So that way, because we have to have some give and take. You know, so I can't finish everything in class and then have also the case studies in class. And, you know, it is difficult for, you know, for me to finish everything. Now, remember, we are still in the approximity, still going on in the approximity. You must be getting sick of it. And so we finished the bones and the joints, and then we came and did the axilla and the pectoral region, we did the arm. Anterior compartment, flexor compartment, posterior compartment, extensor compartment, then we came into the forearm. In the forearm, we finished the flexor compartment in the forearm. Now in the forearm, we need to do the extensor compartment, and then we will walk right into, or we'll do the wrist and after doing the rest, I will come back and do the finish of the forearm means and come back and do the tibial fossa. The tibial fossa is just one, you know, one line, three lines, tibial fossa. Then walk into the palm. That is what, that's the plan. So when we come into the palm, the same deal, you know, muscles, arteries, nerves, and then, you know, like to kind of finish up everything with the radial nerve, the ulnar nerve, and the median nerve, you know, problems. Like if you have, you know, damage to or injury or lesion of median nerve, what can you expect? And ulnar nerve, what can you expect? Radial nerve. That would be the last part, you know, of, you know, of the upper extremity. And then we can walk. We will have time to go to the thorax. I like to do that every year. I do that. You know, I do part of the thorax. You know, in the first quarter itself. I have the quizzes here. I'll put it out during the break. Okay. And so let's move on. The extensor compartment. When we come into the extensor compartment, the same thing as we have seen in the flexor compartment, that is, we have superficial muscles and deep muscles. Okay? So as we look at the extensor compartment here, superficial muscles, there are a lot more superficial muscles in the extensor compartment. That means there are seven superficial muscles in the extensor compartment. There are five superficial muscles in the flexor compartment. There are seven in the extensor compartment. And then we will have the deep muscles also. So as you look at, you know, the extensor, you know, compartment, superficial, you know, group, what, you know, muscles do you have here? As you look at it here, you have the extensor carpi radialis longus, which you have already felt in living anatomy. You palpated that in living anatomy. Then extensor carpi radialis brevis, both of them, you know, you have seen and palpated in living anatomy. All right, and then we go right next to that. What we have here? Extensor digitorum. So extensor digitorum is, you know, going to all the digits. That means the lateral, you know, digits here. And then we have the extensor carpi ulnaris. Extensor, you know, carpi ulnaris. And also there's another little one also going to the digiti minimi, extensor digiti minimi, extensor digiti minimi. Now all these muscles here that we just mentioned, they all have, as you look at it, common characteristics. What is the common characteristics that you have, you know, in case of your extensor, you know, superficial extensor muscles? What common characteristics can you see? And if you compare that with the common characteristics that you have seen for the superficial flexor group, what is the common characteristics that you see? Origin, that's right. Origin from, you know, the lateral epicondyle. Origin from the lateral epicondyle. They all have origin from the lateral epicondyle. Now, I'm not going over all the origins and insertions, but when you look at the extensor carpi radialis longus and brevis, you've seen their insertion to where? Where are they inserting? Where are they inserting in living anatomy? We went over it yesterday.
The base of
the second and the third metacarpal. As a result of that insertion, what action would you assign to these two muscles in addition to the extension? What other action can you assign? Abduction. So these two muscles, not only they extend the wrist, in addition to that, they can also, what do you call, abduct the wrist. What is the abduction of the wrist? What would you call the abduction of the wrist in your language? I mean, a clinician's language, because you're going to be clinical people, most of you, or all of you. And so what in your language, what would you call that abduction of the wrist? Radial deviation. Radial deviation. And so that is because of its insertion there. And what nerve is innervating? What nerve is innervating? Innervating these two muscles. Radial nerve. So what is the nerve? See, these things you have to plug in first. Posterior compartment, extensor compartment. The nerve is the radial nerve. Put in the radial nerve in the extensor compartment. Here as well as here. Here and here, extensor compartment, radial nerve. Okay? Now, and so those are the two, and then we came here and we see the extensor digitorum. If you have studied anatomy a long while ago, and or if you look at some books, this extensor digitorum may also be referred to as extensor, you know, digitorum or extensor communis. Extensor communis. It's an old usage, old terminology. I don't think anybody is, you know, using it. But if you hear it, communis. It's not communist. It is communis. And so, but I don't want you to say, Dr. Thomas was talking about communism in anatomy. And so, extensor communis. Extensor, people may not even say extensor digitorum, they may say extensor communis. Extensor communis is the same as the extensor digitorum. Okay, extensor digitorum. And then you know from, you know, you are using logic in anatomy. Where would they go to insert? As you look at some of these muscles here, yes, that's right, here. To the digits. But which part of the phalanx though? Is it the proximal phalanx or is it the distal? Follow it here, you can see extensor carpi radialis longus, two of them here, and then, you know, the extensor communis or extensor digitorum going to the distal phalanges. So what does that tell you? It's going to the distal phalanges. What does that tell you? So is it an important muscle clinically? Yeah, because that's the only one that can extend. That's the only muscle that can extend, as you look at it here, you know, the distal interphalangeal joint. The distal interphalangeal joint. So that means when you look at, you know, certain clinical conditions, you know, some of the distal, you know, is flexed, hyperflexed, or hyperextended. There are some conditions like that. Swan neck deformity, this deformity, that deformity, where this is like this, and all kinds of things are there. So that's why I go over this and say that this is important because this is the only one that is able to extend the, you know, distal interphalangeal, you know, joint. And so then we have, of course, the extensor digiti minimi. Everything that you need to know about it is included in its name. Extensor digiti minimi. And so then we have extensor carpi ulnaris. Extensor carpi ulnaris. Look at its insertion. Its insertion is to where? This is the base of the fifth metacarpal. Base of the fifth metacarpal. So what is its action or what are its actions? What actions would you assign to this muscle? Ulnar deviation, she already showed me and she told me, and ulnar deviation as well as the extension, you know, it also has ulnar, you know, deviation, alright? And so then we have the two other, you know, what you call superficial muscles, that, you know, there are seven of them, Antinous is a little muscle here, but it is considered here. Okay, that comes here. So here is the antinous. This one here. this also has that, you know, it also shares the same characteristic that is taking word in from the lateral epicondyle and inserting, you know, right over here, you know, to the ulna, you know, right here. And so as you look at this one, what do you think this will be doing? Look at its origin, look at its location, and see where it is, what is likely for this muscle to do. Assist the triceps. It assists, it helps the triceps brachii muscle. Okay? And stabilizes the elbow. And also it can stabilize, you know, the ulna during, you know, the during the pronation. When you're pronating. So that is, and then the seventh one is a funny muscle here. That muscle is the brachioradialis. Brachioradialis is considered with the extensor group of muscles. Why do you think? So what is the action of the brachioradialis? What is the action of the brachioradialis? What does it do? How would you refer to that muscle, brachioradialis? Pardon me? It's a flexor. It's a flexor muscle. Brachioradialis is a flexor muscle. It's a flexor muscle. Remember, weakened flexion. You know, remember, you know, if you have muscular cutaneous nerve damaged, you know, in the axilla here, the effect, what was the effect? What did we talk about last week? We said that, you know, flexion, you know, of the forearm will be weakened, not completely lost, because brachioradialis is a flexor. But it is included always all over, you know, with, you know, the extensor group. The reason is where it is located. And also, what else do you think is the reason? Innervation. It's innervation. What is innervating it? The radial nerve. The radial nerve is innervating it. What are the flexors receiving innervation from? The superficial flexors of the forearm. The majority of them are receiving innervation from where? Median nerve. But this one is not. This one is a flexor. Brachioradialis is a flexor muscle. And it is flexing. It is flexing the forearm and the elbow, but it is innervated by the radial nerve. So it is kind of an anomaly, but that is the fact. And so those are the seven superficial muscles of the extensor compartment. Included in the seven muscles is your, you know, brachioradialis, you know, also a flexor. Then we come to the deep group. The deep group is very interesting. That means you can see most of this deep group on your hand as you're sitting there, okay? And so there are five deep, you know, group muscles. Deep muscles in the forearm, there are five of them. Supinator is one of them. Then abductor pollicis longus, extensor pollicis brevis, and extensor pollicis longus and extensor indicis. If, you know, other than just this one, the supinator muscle, all these other four muscles you can easily identify on your hand when you look at your anatomical snap box. Right here, you all have anatomical snap box. Just, you know, like hitchhiking, you know, like that when you're standing at the door on the road, just like that when you look at the anatomical snap box, you can really, you know, learn the muscles that are coming there. And you can also see the extensor indicis, you know, you already know from the name, all of them have, you know, their names, their actions are included in their names, okay? And that means abductor pollicis longus. What else should the Greeks have told us about that muscle? When the Greeks, you know, named this muscle, they were very clever people. They were thinking about us. They knew we are the computer generation, and so we need to know these things. Abductor harnesses longus. What is it doing? Abducting the? The pollicis is the big, no, the thumb, not the big thumb, only one thumb. Okay, so you're thinking about the big toe, eh? And so, but look at their origins. They're all coming from the depth. They're coming from the depth. And that means, you know, the interosseous membrane, part of the ulna, part of the radius, and going and inserting, and you can really see them inserting each of them here as you look at their, you know, insertions, very, you know, interesting. Now, because of these muscle groups, these five of them, 1, 2, 3, 4 of them, you can really see the origins. You can really see the insertions very easily, okay? And what do you think is innervating these muscles here? All of them. Radial nerve. And there's another thing also I'd like to take you through, that is radial nerve or its posterior interosseous branch. So you may remember last week someplace I wrote there's a posterior interosseous nerve in the posterior compartment here. That's a branch of the radial nerve. So if you see or hear someplace the radial nerve or its branch, or if you see someplace, some people will say the radial nerve, and other places it may say the posterior interosseous nerve. Posterior interosseous nerve is a branch of, it's a branch of the radial nerve, and you don't find it anyplace else, but you find the posterior interosseous nerve only in about this region, coming down like that, you know, innervating all these muscles here. You don't see it in the arm. You don't see it in the arm. Only in the forearm, you know, you see that. Okay. So radial nerve or its branch, the posterior interosseous nerve, you know, they make sure of innervation, you know, to this muscle. And then we have the supinator. Supinator, and it has Nehra has a very nice diagram of just the three deep muscles here. Okay, so he shows the supinator very nicely. Okay, where? All right. Okay, this one. Here, oh, that is only the origins insertions, but all right, okay. That is also the origins insertions. In the atlas, there is a very nice diagram of the supinator. So in the CD, the best diagram I can come up with supinator. You can guess that is the proletarteres, the supinator is not coming from the back. Supinator, okay. There is, you know, you have the atlas and you can look at that one because that really shows the two quadratus muscles and also the supinator. It shows the supinator, but I don't have that diagram in the CD right here. Now, pardon me? Yeah, Nehra has a plate number, what did you say, 440? Yeah, 440, 443, somewhere there. If you have the second edition, the first edition is 440, I believe. And so it's in the 440, somewhere there, there is a good diagram of, you know, supinator. But in this CD that I'm using, the best supinator is this one. So here you can see, you only see a part of it. That means what part you're seeing of the supinator is its insertion. Its insertion to the radius is what you're seeing. But it has the origin, it also has the origin from the lateral epicondyle. It has the lateral epicondyle and also it has attachment to the ulna. And supinator, and what nerve innervates the supinator? I'll come to you in a minute. What nerve innervates the supinator? Radial, yeah, that's your question.
So I was going to say, so for supinator, we should say the radial nerve innervates it, and for the other four, the posterior interosseous branch. Is that right?
Sure. Mary Allison has a suggestion. Supinator is the radial nerve, and the other four, you know, that means abductor pollicis longus, extensor pollicis brevis, extensor pollicis longus, and the extensor indicis. Those four, why don't we say it is the posterior interosseous nerve? In fact, that is what the books, you know, say. In fact, that's what the books say. But, you know, because you guys have so many names, so much, and as you're going to practice medicine, are you going to remember the posterior interosseous nerve, or are you going to remember the radial nerve? Okay, so this is why I just go easy, you know, with, you know, this radial nerve. But it is the posterior interosseous nerve for these deep muscles except the supinator. You are very accurate. And so now let's move on to the, okay. Now that is the extensor compartment muscles. Any questions on the extensor compartment muscles? Yes, Sarah. Either what is right? Either answer will be fine, depending upon what muscle you are talking about. Okay, posterior interosseous nerve for these four muscles that I just, you know, mentioned a second ago. And, pardon me? Spinal roots cannot be, oh, spinal roots are different for the posterior interosseous nerve. That is true, but it is a branch of the radial nerve. Yes, that is true, because the posterior interosseous nerve doesn't have all the spinal roots that are found in the radial nerve. That is very true. But, so if somebody asks you for the spinal roots, then you have to give the right spinal roots. Okay? If somebody is asking for the spinal roots. Often, the spinal roots, you know, will be asked only, not by me, for such innovation. I'll ask the spinal roots of the nerve. But I don't go for the posterior interosseous and the anterior interosseous nerves. I don't go for the spinal roots. I go for the major, you know, ones, the radial nerve, yes, the median nerve, yes. But, you know, where you may need to know the spinal roots, manipulations. Manipulations cause, they may, I don't know, they may, you know, expect you to know the spinal roots of posterior interosseous nerve. Okay, so the nerves of the forearm. Now, from talking to, you know, several people from this class, and I see that, you know, some people need to, what they need to do is when you're studying, as I said some of them yesterday, put a nerve in the compartment in which you are. So you already know it is roughly going to be that nerve that is innervated. Okay? So when we look at the nerves of the forearm in the anterior compartment, what nerve do you see in the anterior compartment of the forearm? Median nerve and ulna. You see median nerve and the ulna nerve. Two nerves we see in the anterior compartment of the forearm. Okay? And so median nerve, and so when we look at the median nerve here, it's spinal roots. Median nerve is right here. And okay, and this is in your coloring packet that, you know, that you have picked up a while ago. And this, pardon me? Oh, okay. This even shows the beginning right here, the median nerve, right here, okay? And so the M, remember the M from the lateral cord? And from, yes?
Someone was asking if you had any more packets.
Okay. Yes, I do. You may have it, you may not remember, because it's more than a week ago when I started the upper extremities, when I, you know, brought it to the class. Okay, I'm going to put it here so I don't have to stand here. And so, when you look at the median nerve, you can see it's coming from the medial cord as well as from the lateral cord, and that is that origin that you see here. Then it comes in the arm, it has no distribution. I should not use the... there, so let me use the purple I haven't used for a while. Let me use the purple, thank you. And so here, it is coming down in the arm, it just comes. But as you're drawing on this one, look at the route it's taking. So you should be observing some of these things. The route is coming, so when we talk about, say, a fracture, you know, supracondylar fracture, what structures can be affected or damaged, then you would have the picture in your head. You see the median nerve is coming down here. It can be damaged, isn't it? Because it is right here, close to the condyles. And then coming in the forearm. When it comes in the forearm, it is innervating all these flexor muscles in the forearm. All of them, all the four, you know, superficial muscles in the forearm, except which one? The fifth superficial flexor of the forearm is not innervated by the median nerve, which is that muscle. Flexor carpi ulnaris, okay? And then it also gives a branch, just like the radial nerve, it also gives a branch in the anterior compartment here. In the flexor compartment, it gives a branch. That branch here is the anterior interosseous branch. Anterior interosseous branch. See, posterior interosseous branch here, posterior compartment. Anterior interosseous branch, anterior compartment of the forearm. But two different nerves are their mothers. Okay? Median nerve is the mother of the anterior interosseous nerve. Radial nerve is the mother of the posterior interosseous nerve. Anterior, posterior. Okay? And so in the anterior compartment then, we have the median nerve innervating or its branch, just like in the posterior compartment. The median nerve or its branch, the anterior interosseous nerve is innervating, you know, all the superficial muscles, you know, the four of the superficial, not all, four of the five superficial muscles. And then there are three deep, so, you know, muscles, you know, flexor muscles in the anterior compartment. Which are those three, you know, deep muscles in the flexor compartment of the forearm? Which are those?
Digitorum profundus.
Flexor digitorum. Flexor digitorum profundus and? Flexor pollicis longus and? Pronator quadratus and pronator quadratus. Pronator quadratus, those three. And are all these three receiving innervation from the median nerve? Or is there any difference there? One of them has two innervations. Flexor digitorum profundus has median nerve and ulnar nerve. And they share. And so flexor digitorum profundus, when you look at the, yeah, I have gone over the, when we were going over the muscles, I mentioned it, you might have forgotten. So right here, as you look at it here, you can see, here is the flexor digitorum profundus. And so this part, the medial half of that muscle, this right up to the medial half, is innervated by the ulnar nerve. And the lateral half of the flexor digitorum profundus, this is superficialis, but profundus is what I'm, you know, talking about. And let me go to the profundus because I see some people are squinting and saying, what is she talking about? All right, so here, is it the same flexor digitorum? Flexor digitorum profundus. So the medial half and the lateral half, you know, by the ulnar, you know, the ulnar nerve and the median nerve, and of course flexor pollicis by the median nerve. So median nerve is an important nerve, even for the deep muscles and the superficial muscles that are flexors, you know, in the forearm. That means flexion of the wrist. And then what the median nerve does is it comes into the palm. That's why it crosses. That means it comes, you know, it crosses the wrist and it comes into the palm, and it has innervation in the palm also. And so we will take the innervations or the median nerve when we come to do the palm. what muscles are innervated, you know, by the median nerve and the spinal roots. The spinal roots of the median nerve, what are the spinal roots of the, I know last week I wrote this again, spinal roots of the median nerve, C5, 6 and T1, okay? And which other nerve has the same radial nerve? The radial nerve also has the same, you know, spinal roots. And let me see. So that is the, when we look at the nerves of the forearm, and then what other nerve do we have in the forearm? The ulnar nerve. The ulnar nerve, okay? And so when you look at the ulnar nerve in the forearm, the same thing that you know, we should do for the ulnar nerve as well. As you look at it here, so here is the ulnar nerve on this side here, this one, the ulnar nerve. Look at it, it passes in the arm and it comes, you know, into the forearm, but not right in the middle or anything, because it likes to keep its territory, and so it walks on each side. That means on the right side, you know, like in North America, people are walking on the right side of the trail or the road. Okay, in Europe and India, we walk on the left side. And so here, it is walking on the left side, right here, following the Greek tradition, because, you know, Greece, Europe, and so right here, you have the ulnar nerve coming. And what is it doing? Flexor carpi ulnaris. You see how easy and beautiful it is. When you look at these diagrams here, okay, here, see, here is the flexor carpi ulnaris, then flexor digitorum profundus. Flexor digitorum profundus. And then it's not doing anything else. That means, you know, the middle half of the flexor digitorum profundus, and then what does it do? It, you know, it comes right into the palm. So then it has distribution in the palm. It's cutaneous innervation. You know, we will go over the cutaneous innervation of the entire arm, you know, up toward the end. And so here we have the ulnar nerve then has done its job in the anterior compartment or in the forearm, and it goes right into the palm. It has extensive innervation in the palm. So we will take both the ulnar nerve and the median nerve in the palm after we finish the muscles in the palm, after we finish a few other, you know, things. And so what are the spinal roots of the ulnar nerve? What spinal roots would you assign to the ulnar nerve? C8 and T1. C7, it may get some contributions only. So I will not include C7 as a spinal root of the ulnar nerve. When you are asked for the spinal root of the ulnar nerve, C8 and T1. The C7, whenever you see in books, it is in light shade, isn't it? It is not, you know, the same, you know, dark, dense. That's because only a contribution. Okay? And so that is, so C8 and T1, the spinal roots. And even in this one, you can see it even goes a little bit of the cutaneous innervation, which will be dealt with, you know, a little, you know, later and not now. And so those are the two nerves that we find in the forearm. And so let me go over nerves of the forearm, the median nerve and its distribution, and ulnar nerve and its distribution. Right here we have gone over all ulnar nerve, spinal roots in the posterior compartment, as vessels of the forearm and arteries, radial artery, ulnar artery, branches of your, what are the branches of? What are the branches of? The brachial artery. But there are two other arteries that we haven't gone over. But if you remember from the leg, if you remember from the leg, you know, the arteries in the leg, in the posterior compartment of the leg, what arteries do you have? What do you have there? the arteries. Posterior, posterior tibial, posterior tibial, anything else? Fibular. That's a fibular. That's a fibular. Just that's a fibular artery. That's a fibular artery. Just like that. Radial and ulnar. Both of them. As you look at it, going on the radial side, ulnar side. I'm not going to, you know, pay too much attention to it because you already know about this. You know, I hope. And so here, from the ulnar artery, there is an artery reasonably big. That means it is not a skinny little one. That means it's fairly in any place. Dissection or, you know, theory or any place is fair game. A common interosseous artery. So there is a common interosseous artery. It's a branch of the ulnar, of the ulnar artery. Okay? So that common interosseous artery is right up here. Right up, you know, right up here, it, you can see that little bit, but not really a whole lot. This is where, this is the radial, this is the ulnar. From the ulnar, deep in here, you have a common interosseous artery. Why would you call it common interosseous? Why don't you just call it interosseous? Because it splits. You already know. Good. So because this common interosseous splits into an anterior interosseous, yeah? Posterior interosseous, an anterior interosseous, and a posterior interosseous. Alright, now if someone asks you a question, someone says the anterior interosseous artery travels with the anterior interosseous nerve. It's correct, isn't it? They both travel together in the forearm, in the middle, right over here in the middle they travel together, okay? And in the posterior compartment it's just the same. The posterior interosseous artery, posterior compartment of the forearm, posterior interosseous artery and the posterior interosseous nerve, they travel together in the posterior compartment, okay? And so if you see, just like in the posterior compartment of the leg, if you see an artery and a nerve in the middle of the posterior compartment here, traveling together, that has to be your posterior interosseous artery and the posterior interosseous nerve. Because the radial nerve here is not traveling with an artery. It's not traveling with an artery. It is, you know, bold enough to go on its own. It doesn't need any companions. So that is the anterior interosseous nerve is a branch of the median nerve. Anterior interosseous artery is a branch of the common interosseous artery. Posterior interosseous nerve is a branch of the radial nerve. And posterior interosseous artery is a branch of the common interosseous artery. It's a branch of the common interosseous artery coming into the posterior compartment. No more, I'm not going into the details of that because there are more details there, I'm not going there. I only want you to just know some of these, what do you call it, terminologies, and as people may, you know, mention things. Posterior interosseous, I don't worry, distribution, where it is located. Deep veins, radial vein, ulnar vein, and then the superficial veins are, radial vein and ulnar veins, are they double or single? Radial veins and ulnar veins, are they double or single? Double, they are double. Traveling on both sides of the radial artery, ulnar artery. You don't see too many pictures of them, even in atlases, because it's assumed, it's understood. People have seen it and they know it is, you know, there. Superficial veins of the forearm, we have gone over the basilic vein and the cephalic vein. Superficial veins, when we look at it here in the forearm, from where are they both coming from? Which part are they coming from? From where do they take origin? The dorsal? Yeah, the dorsal venous plexus, okay. The dorsal venous plexus, just like in the foot, It's like in the dorsal venous plexus. So right here, no, not this one here. Okay, here. All right. Okay, I don't like the face of him here. Okay. Yes, go open up. All right, so here you have... Okay, let's go here. Right here. Okay, good. As you note, here we have the dorsal venous network or plexus right here, and you have both the basilic vein taking origin and continuing on the ulnar side and the cephalic vein continuing on the radial side. Those are superficial veins. They are reasonably big. And where do they go? And you have seen them in the arm, but so this is where they are going. They have communications in between, and then come here, you can see the basilic vein came over here, the cephalic vein that has come over here, and you can see there's communication. The cephalic continues on all the way right up to here, right up to just immediately below the clavicle, right here, and the clavipectoral triangle, you know, that's where it goes to join what? The cephalic vein joins what structure? The subclavian. The axillary vein. The axillary vein. The basilic vein, what does that do? How does it terminate? It forms the axillary vein with, you know, some of your, and then your median cubital vein. And there can be different patterns here, okay? There can be just one here, there can be two like that. Anyway, so the median cubital veins, this is your friend. This area is your friend because you guys will be doing a lot with, you know, the cubital area. That means taking blood, you know, giving, you know, things to people, you know, into the venous system. And so that is the cubital area that, you know, you will be dealing with. And so those are the median cubital veins. And the other is there is going, you know, communications between these superficial veins as well as superficial and, you know, deep veins, you know, at the same time. There's communication going on, you know, all the time. And so that also you have to, you know, keep in mind. And so that is the forearm. That means I'm done with the forearm. Flexor compartment, extensor compartment, muscles, you know, their innervations, their actions, and the blood vessels all put in. And what is left is the lymphatics. Now, I will not do it right now. What I'll do is, that's why I don't have it on the outline right here. The reason is I'll do the entire, you know, the palm. After doing the palm, I will do the lymphatics because it goes, you know, from one to the other. And so this outline, this is now going to be the next outline, that is arm, forearm, hand, two, is, you know, going to be started. And so let me see the wrist region. So before doing that, the wrist region, do you want to break or do you want us to go with the wrist region?
Yes.
Okay, I can kind of see the little inertia there, and yes.
I like the A's, the O's, the Y's.
Okay, good, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, with the lateral side of the lymphatics will drain to the small saphenous, the medial side will drain to the great saphenous.
Mm-hmm.
But there is, to go along with the, so you would think that they would have,
why can't it be any other place? Why you have to think otherwise? What is happening? What can happen?
Like the venous arch, there's also the lymphatic arch goes along with that. And so if there was a blockage, it would push that infection to the medial side.
Yeah, this can happen.
Okay, so, because other that's my idea. That seems
Alex, so we'll just discuss it there and we'll go with it. Yeah.
Okay.
Because the reason is,
I can't see my building.
Here I am.
Oh, this is really confusing.
No. There's some people with no
name on the back, and I don't remember if I did.
That's what I was thinking.
I feel bad looking at people's quizzes. Oops.
They're supposed to be alphabetical.
What else do you want? Is it nine? No. No.
That'd be great.
I don't know what to do.
Did I write my name on it? Is this my...
Are they in order?
They're that good? Kind of alphabetical. Yeah,
there's mine.
Oh, is it?
Is this yours?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, not bad.
Oh.
Four, three, four, right?
Thank you.
Hi, please come down. Please come down the aisle. And two things. Somebody mentioned to me that there are still some people who are looking for partners for case studies, and of course you still have a day left or so. Yeah, Tuesday, Wednesday, 2 days, 2.5 days left. Okay, anyways, so if you are still looking for partners, you know, to complete your case study, then please, I don't know, have to contact each other. Just raise your hands and go at the end of the class and talk to the person, and we won't put a thing on the email. You guys have the email computer, there are people, and so you should have no problem there. I heard about it, you know, just now. And two, please take your quizzes, and when you see that plus one added, you know, to your scores, it's because I dropped a question, because even though that question was a very legitimate question, but, you know, on the, in my mind it was legitimate, you know, and so on the, on the lymphatic drainage of the, somewhere, you know, the nipple and the skin, you know, where does it go initially? I did mention it, but it goes to show me when I mentioned this in class. Sarah, can you please shut that door? To show that, you know, how many people don't hear it or don't internalize it. You know, so the lymphatic drainage, you know, from the nipple and the areola, you know, initially will go to which lymph node was the question. That is the question I dropped. That's the question I dropped, okay? Yes?
I thought you said you would accept writing the question.
Yeah, I thought that as well.
Writing and rotation?
Yeah, you said after the test that you would accept writing.
Yeah, but I gave you that 1 point. Okay, so that, no, no, not for that. But I gave you that 1 point, so that should even out.
So what if we got
the 1 point? The next one, you did not get it right. There hardly anyone who got it right.
I got it right.
You got it right?
Yeah.
Show me. Misjudging the students, somebody will write in the evaluation. Which number is that? I can't repeat it. Which number is that?
Six.
I think that really is excellent. That really is excellent. I don't think too many people got it. Okay, otherwise you end up reading, because I can't do the class time for everything else and then, you know, finish everything so quick. What is your suggestion or question or something?
Is there another name for that lymph node?
No, I see here axillary lymph nodes is the initial where it is going. I asked the lymph nodes. Anterior axillary will be, you know, there are 2-3 groups of them in the anterior axillary that's been included. Yes?
For some reason I thought it was also
the pectoral, there's medial pectoral, anterior pectoral, lateral pectoral, so when you just put pectoral alone, I just can't accept it. So the best thing for the class, I thought, was drop that question, so that, you know, it doesn't, you know, you are the only one, and there's another person who was sick, who also put it, those are the only two people, you know, got that question, that's why I dropped it. You got it too? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Dr.
Tanya? Yeah.
So if some people did get that, then shouldn't, since you did say that you would accept gliding as an answer for the acromial clavicular joint, shouldn't we get a point for that? Because
I'm not going to, okay, wait, listen to this. That point, gliding, okay, then cut all the quizzes back to me, give it to me, it's gliding. God, I thought I had already, you know, taken that into account, but the rotation was, cut all of them and pile them up separately there. 1 point here, 1 point there. You know, that's not. I shouldn't have dropped that question. Okay.
I got it. 2 points.
Okay. That point is. That point, 1 point, how, what is it going to be out of 100? Okay, let's go. I have no time to just go.
Okay.
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 On a board exam, you're not going to get this. Understand that. On a board exam, you don't get to review your exam. Understand that. On a board exam, you have to put several numbers on an exam. Understand all these things. Put it at the beginning. Yes, because I'm not going to do that particularly. Yes. Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's move on with the risk region. Okay. What do we find in the risk region? Whatever is needed was mentioned in class, but of course, you know, that not many people will see. Okay, unless when we come to the risk region, let's do here. What do we find here? The retinacula. The flexor retinacula in the flexor, part, and the extensor retinacula in the extensor part. And so the retinacula you already know. And what is it we have already defined? Okay, now, what structures and problems are it doing? That is important for Vincent to know, because he can have risk injuries. And you can have all kinds of things for which you need to know. When you look in the extensor compartment, what structures are passing here under the extensor retinacula? So all these extensor, tendons are passing in the extensor compartment, and then let's go to the flexor compartment here. And the flexor compartment is the same thing we have. Flexor tendons. In addition to the flexor tendons, look in the flexor compartment. And you also have the median nerve, and you also have the arteries, and both arteries, that means, the other arteries, radial, it's not coming in here, but it is right here in the flexor region, but not coming into the palm. Or under the flexor retinaculum, it is going right, into the elastical snap box, into the palm. And the nerves arteries, and then that is where the carpal tunnel comes. Carpal tunnel. What is carpal tunnel? And, why are we, looking at the carpal tunnel here? What structures form the carpal tunnel? What structures are found in the carpal tunnel? Okay, and so as you look at the carpal tunnel per se, we have separate bones here first, and then you can see. Okay, carpal bones. Please look at your pisiform, your tricuspid trunk. And look at your scaphoid and your fascia. And so as this, this is medial, this is lateral, as these bones are here, what is happening is when you have the fibers of the flexor retinaculum is, passing right there. Okay, right here. Right here. They attach to these four carpal bones. So that's why it's called a tunnel over the carpal bones. Okay? And then, in that tunnel, what are the structures that are passing? Right here, as you look, you can see some of the carpal bones, you can see some of the tendons, that how close they are sitting right over here. And in the tunnel, there are 9 tendons passing, and median nerve passing. What are these 9 tendons? Which 9 centers are passing in the carpal tunnel. What would you say? Which 9 centers are passing in the carpal tunnel? Pardon me? Cluster digitorum, superficial tendons, cluster glucaric tendon. Cluster digitorum, superficial tendon, and anything else. Anything else? Now, 9 tendons. Thanks. Okay. What else? Flexor digitorum profundus also. Flexor digitorum profundus also. Both flexor tendons, as you look at them here, you can see the flexor tendons, but you see them here both. This is superficialis tendon, this is, you know, flexor digitorum, this is profundus tendon. Profundus tendon, superficialis tendon. So in each of these tunnels there are two tendons, because this one here, the fibrous sheath of each of these, you know, flexor, you know, tendons, the flexor tunnel, the fibrous sheath, all this. In the outline, I have given those, but I'm not going to go over those in class in terms of, you know, the fibrous tunnel. But carpal tunnel, its significance is very important. But the median nerve is the other thing that's passing. The 9 tendons, as well as the median nerve, is also passing in the carpal tunnel. Okay? And so, then if there's any crowding in this tunnel, and what can happen is that, you know, it can compress the median nerve. It can compress the median nerve, and it can be, remember, what did we talk about the other day, when we talked about the carpal bones, what did we talk about that can cause, you know, compression on the median nerve? What did we talk about? Lunate displacement. Lunate displacement, that's right. Lunate displacement can cause crowding, and also you can have arthritic changes, any changes, anything that will crowd, you know, the tunnel, the structures in the carpal tunnel. That can compress the median nerve. And so if that happens, then, of course, the median nerve is going to show certain, you know, the compression signs and symptoms, okay? And so what is that, what are those signs and symptoms of the carpal tunnel that one can see? Signs and symptoms of the carpal tunnel?
Numbness.
Pardon me?
Numbness.
Numbness, okay, good. Okay, numbness. Numbness where?
Laterally.
Numbness where did you say?
Laterally.
Laterally is not good enough. Numbness where? Lateral meaning what? What lateral?
Oh.
What lateral?
So the lateral part of the
lateral part. Lateral part of the palm?
There, yeah.
Okay, it's the median nerve that is passing in here is being compressed. Okay, it's the median nerve. Now, numbness, what my question is, good you're thinking. My question is, so numbness, tingling in the palm or in the digits? I did not complete my question, okay? Is it in the palm or in the digits or in both?
Cutaneous.
Yeah, cutaneous, but my question is, what did you say, cutaneous? Okay. Okay. So, numbness in both palm and the digits? Just the digits. Why only the digits, Vaishali? Why not in the palm? Look at the diagram. Observe. You have to be, a physician has to be observant. When your patient is walking in your office, okay? You should see, you know, why she's walking like that when he's walking like that. You know, interesting, come on, sit down. See what she or he is doing. Observe it. Being observant is a good thing. Observation is going to be a good, you know, quality for a physician. Smelling, observing, doing all these things. So right here, you see that? See the cutaneous branch that is going to the palm here is superficial to the flexor retinaculum. superficial to the construct natural. I think that is where Alison Higgy was going, you know. And so, but she didn't complete it. So there it is. So therefore, for this part here, you know, there is no tingling or numbness that you're going to see. Tingling or numbness. That tingling has another medical term. So that means paresthesia. Paresthesia is, you know, tingling. Okay? And what else? What else? Hypoesthesia. Diminished sensation. And you can also have, if it continues, you know, you can also have anesthesia. Loss of tactile sensation. Loss of tactile sensation. Okay? And so that is what the patient is going to come talk about, numbness, you know, tingling, and you know, diminished sensation in the digits. As an educated, you know, physician, you're going to be able to quickly, you know, diagnose, you know, because you're not now, from today onwards, for the next quiz and the final, you're not going to say it is going to be, all these signs and symptoms are going to be in the palm and the digits. So you're going to say that it is, you know, that this is, you know, loss of sensation is, you know, not in the palm, you know, but it is in the digits. And so that is the carpal tunnel, you know, part. And then let me go to the, okay, that is put right over here. Carpal tunnel syndrome, yes. And muscles acting at various joints, given in the textbook, elbow, and so also you can figure it out. And so please read the muscles acting at various joints. That means, you know, at the elbow joint, and the book has a district, the edition has a list of those, both radioulnar joints and the wrist joint. What muscles are acting on these, especially these are going to be very useful in manipulations class, where, you know, you need to know which muscle is, you know, doing this or that. Now you may wonder why the cubital fossa comes here. Now remember, I haven't come into the palm. I'm done with the, what you call the forearm, right here, and then the wrist, because, you know, it is neither with the palm nor with the forearm, so wrist, you know, the clinical significance there is done. Cubital fossa, just for, because I mentioned enough about the cubital fossa, but formally just finishing up, because cubital fossa is an area where clinicians have a lot of, you know, significance too, because you go to take blood and, you know, you go to give infusions and, you know, stuff like that. And so as you look at this here, this the medial and the lateral epicondyles, and then, you know, from there, you know, this is the base, this is, you know, high up there, you know, is the base. And so right deep in here like that, this is the cubital fossa. What is significant here is what structures are there. More so than the boundaries, what structures do you see there? Okay, what do you see there? You already see in the roof of the cubital fossa, you see the median cubital veins. You can see that. And so then, you know, close to those, you can see cutaneous veins are there, cutaneous nerves are there. So when you're going to put a needle into any one of these veins, you see, look how some of the cutaneous nerves are close by, just, you know, deep to it, you know, there. And also look at it on the medial side, just deep to the skin, these veins are sitting. But just look here, the bicipital aponeurosis is just deep. So if you're putting a pin here, and if the pin is going here, you know, right first here and then going into the vein, you know, that is going to be a little tough. So your needle should not go into that tough place, you know, that is the bicipital upper neurosis, and you don't want to go there. And what other deeper, you know, structures are in the cubital fossa? As you look at it, the median nerve. And so here you have, you know, the, as you look at it here, you have the median nerve coming down. And you also have the brachial artery, because the brachial artery doesn't branch off, you know, superior to the elbow. It branches off below the elbow. And so the brachial artery is there. And look at the relationship of the brachial artery to the median nerve, okay? And then here you have the ulnar artery. That means, the, you know, the initial part of it. And the radial artery, and also the common interosseous artery, just deep to this muscle, to the pronator-teres muscle. You can see this, you know, taking origin from the ulnar. But I don't know why they always keep a little bit of that muscle there. And often people don't hit the radial nerve, because radial nerve here is kind of protected by the brachioradialis muscle. So here is the radial nerve, and so because the muscle when it comes there. And of course you have in the floor, here you have the brachialis muscle, this one, brachialis muscle. And so these are the important structures. From medial to lateral, you have the median nerve, the brachial artery, the radial ulnar arteries, and also the common interosseous artery. And the veins you have already, you know, seen. So that is the cubital fossa, and the clinical note here is, you know, what, you know, can you, you know, the what can you hit here when you put a needle here, and you know you don't want to give a bump, you know, to your patients or on each other. First you will be drawing the blood from each other, isn't it? Yes, I've seen people walking around with bumps after they are, you know, hitting each other's forearm. You know, for blood samples, because that is where, you know, you will be doing. And lymphatics later. That means, you know, for the entire, you know, upper extremity, you know, lymphatics will do after I'm done with the palm, because, you know, it is, you know, beginning, you know, in the palm. And so, going on into the hand, that means the hand or the manus. Hand or the manus. Now, if I say to you, there's an infection in the volar surface of the hand. Volar surface. What surface would you look for? Would you look for it here on the dorsum? Would you look for it here in the palm? Volar. Volar surface is another term, and some people may use the term volar. Volar surface, okay. And so here, which is it, dorsum or the palm?
Dorsum.
Palmar surface. Palmar surface is the volar surface. Palmar or volar surface, okay? So you may see that term used, you know, sometimes. Now, coming in here, bones, you know, the carpal bones and the areas, you know, the wrist, and then metacarpal, phalanges, joints, we have already gone over. Surface anatomy, you know, I'd like you to refer to the text, you know, for surface anatomy, what is this, your, you know, cutaneous, not your subcutaneous tissue, and, you know, the deep structures, anything. And that means we have gone over the carpal tunnel, so I'm not going to do that. Arrangement of structures in the palm is what I'm going to look at. Let's look at the arrangement of structures in the palm. Skin, subcutaneous tissue, the cutaneous innervation, palmar upper neurosis. We have mentioned the palmar upper neurosis, and what muscle inserts into the palmar upper neurosis. What muscle inserts into the palmar upper neurosis? Which one?
Palmaris longus.
Palmaris longus. Okay, so right here, as you look at the palm, And you can see the palmaris longus, and you know, inserting right into the palmar aponeurosis. And in this diagram, it's also a much better diagram to see the cutaneous branch. The cutaneous branch, look at it here, the cutaneous branch of the median nerve, you know, coming into the palm. You know, why up to this area also, you will not have that tingling and all those things. Okay, this one also shows that. And look at the skin here. And because you, when you go to, you know, do some work, some what do you call incisions, because you guys will be doing minor surgery, you know, in places, and stitching and minor surgery, or allowed, you know, on your after you, you know, graduate, but you will be practicing. So you need to be aware of, you know, the skin, you know, texture difference, and that you can figure out. And so the deep fascia, you are, the other thing is the deep fascia condensed here, you have the palmar aponeurosis. In addition to that, what you also have here is the compartmentalization of the palm by this, you know, fascia. As you look at it here, look at the palmar aponeurosis coming here and becoming, you know, like four strands here and going to each of these digits. But in addition to that, the palmar aponeurosis being here, it compartmentalizes. Here you have the thenar and eminence, the thenar eminence, hypothenar eminence, central compartment, and then here you have the adductor compartment. So there are four compartments that you would find in the palm. So you have to be aware of these four compartments because of the possibility, you know, of infections, the possibility of infections. And so that is why, you know, I mentioned these, you know, four, you know, compartments. And it's really compartmentalized because you have the fibers going all the way down to the bone. They are not just sitting here like that, okay? There are fibers going right down to the bone and right down to the bone, so they are, you know, compartmentalized, you know, very easily. And so that is the, what we call the compartments, thenar compartment, hypothenar compartment, central compartment, and the adductor, you know, compartment. Now, in the central compartment, generally speaking, what structures, if you cut this off, what structures do we expect to see in the central compartment? The nerves, the two nerves, you will find branches of your median nerve, you will find branches of your, some branches of your ulnar nerve, and also you will have the arteries, and before coming to the arteries, you also have the flexor tendons, you know, coming down what do you call it? So here, look at it here. All those things you will see, but the flexor tendons coming down, very well protected by the common flexor sheath, the common flexor sheath. This common flexor sheath is also referred to as the ulnar bursa. The ulnar bursa. Okay? And so then before leaving one clinical condition, there are other clinical conditions. One clinical condition I like to take you through is the deputant contracture. And so that is in the outline, you know, given there. I don't know if people at the back can see the outline or not. Maybe you have printed it out. So right here, what happens is the deputant contracture is a flexion deformity. So where, what happens is shortening of these fibers, thickening and shortening of these fibers take place. Now, which are usually what happens is, usually what is happening is, this one here shows you. Yeah, this is better for that. See all these fibers? See, as you see all these fibers here, they become shortened and thickened. And especially for these two, the little finger and the ring finger. So as a result, when there is progressive thickening and shortening of these fibers taking place here, these two fingers may sit like that. you may not be able to completely extend it. That is why it's called a traction deformity. And some people may refer to it as a dinner fork deformity also, like layman's language, the dinner fork deformity. And so what can happen is that usually these one or two fingers are affected. Usually one or two fingers are, you know, affected in the flute and, you know, contracture. These are affected. And let me see, anything else? Familial tendency. When, so if the grandfather has it, the grandson can expect it. And so it's not just male-dominated, you know, disease or anything, but it can happen to either genders. And but you see a tendency in the families, you know, so you can guess.
That was a shortening of the palmar aponeurosis.
Not the palmar aponeurosis, you know, the medial, you know, fibers of the palmar aponeurosis, not the entire palmar aponeurosis. Okay, now then we come to the muscles, because we are done with, you know, the aponeurosis and the everything else. Now we go look at the arrangement of muscles in the palm. When we see that, just like in the foot, you have extrinsic muscles and intrinsic muscles. Now we are going to look at the extrinsic muscles. You already know, so I'm not going to go over, you know, the extrinsic muscles, because all these flexors that are coming in, we have gone over them. So the intrinsic muscles, so the tendinous insertions of the extrinsic muscles, and the bellies are in the forearm, and the long flexors, long extensors, and all that, okay? And the other is the synovial flexor sheaths, the fibrous flexor sheaths, and how are these flexor tendons inserted, that you're going to be reading from the textbook. And as a physician, it is interesting for you to know these things, where these flexor sheaths are. These are the synovial flexor sheaths, and you've seen in the previous diagram, you know, about the fibrous, you know, sheaths for each of them that you also have here. It's very interesting how nature has really perfected us, you know, because these tendons, when they come in here, and when we use our palms, you know, to do things like that, you know, we are very well protected. And also even here, these are the things, just read a little bit more on it. What is it, you know, what does it do? And so, and then the other thing here, the intrinsic muscles of the hand. When we look at the intrinsic muscles of the hand, what muscles do we have there? We have the thenar and the hypothenar and the lumbricals and the adductor. So the thenar muscles, there are three little muscles in the, you know, in the inserting to the thumb. So those are the thenar muscles. And what are these, you know, thenar muscles? There's an abductor, and there's a flexor, as you look at it, and an opponent. Yes?
Can you write that word?
Write what? Write what?
Yeah.
Thenar. T-H. It's not P. It's T. T-H. Thenar. Thenar eminence is given here. Thenar compartment. Thenar compartment in the outline is given here. Thenar compartment. So thenar is the same spelling. Thenar, hypothenar. And so it's the same spelling, thenar eminence and hypothenar eminence. What is eminence? Like, you know, like a raised area. So thenar eminence, hypothenar eminence. Thenar, hypothenar. Okay? And small and big mound. That's what it means. And so when you look in the thenar eminence, what you see are three muscles. Okay, now let me see, where was I? Arrangement of structures. And then, arrangement of structures. Here, okay. So here, synovial flexor sheaths. Okay. Where is that fellow right here, my outline page, when I went back here, okay, here. So we are looking at the intrinsic muscles. When we look at the intrinsic muscles, that means the short muscles of the thumb. The short muscles of the thumb, there are three of them. All three of them together, you call them the thenar muscles, okay? In the thenar muscles, you have an abductor that's sitting right there. Then you have a flexor. And then deep to this abductor there, you have what is called an opponent's, like you remember the opponent's action? So you have an opponent's muscle there, and so here. This one shows you all, you know, three of them there. Now, so here is the opponent's. Here's the spelling of the opponent's here. And here's the abductor you have cut off, the flexor that is there. All three muscles have origins, insertion. You're going to be looking at the origins and insertions of these muscles. And all three muscles are going to be innervated by which nerve? Median nerve. Okay? And so, then the short muscles of the little finger, the same. Three muscles, the same. When you come over here, the hypothenar muscles, also three muscles. Look at them here. Hypothenar, this is from the atlas. Hypothenar, the spelling is there. Hypothenar, abductor digiti minimi, flexor digiti minimi, you know, brevis, and opponens. So the same thing, but only coming into the hypothenar, you know, eminence there, okay? And the short muscles of the digits, their names tell you what they do. Abductor digiti minimi, flexor digiti minimi brevis, and opponens digiti minimi. What is the opponent's action? You know, the opponent's action. So their actions are, yes, there.
You're showing me the actions.
Good for you. And so these three muscles, what do you think is innervating them? The ulnar nerve. Here is the ulnar nerve coming right down, so it is, you know, innervating. And then, there's a little muscle called pomatis brevis. Pomatis longus coming, you know, an extrinsic muscle coming. And pomatis brevis is another one. And so that is right over here. It's a small muscle. But you have to, when you're doing the palm, when you're dissecting the palm, you need to dissect that muscle first, you know, to get to the others. Okay? And so right here, yes. Okay. Here. It has been cut. Pomatis brevis. Its insertion is here. Its origin is here. Pomatis brevis is a thin muscle. Comes right, sits right here like that. Takes origin from the middle border of your palmar aponeurosis and inserts into the skin. Now, since it is right over here, it protects the ulnar nerve. It protects the ulnar artery. And also, when you want to do this action, you know, the opponent's action, you know, it increases the cup, you know, or the hollow of the hand is increased by contractions of your pomatis, you know, brevis, you know, muscle. And then we come to, just like in the foot, the lumbricals. Remember the same name, lumbricals. How many lumbricals do you expect in the palm? How many?
Four of them.
From where do you think they take origin? From the foot. Think of the foot. Yeah. Origin. Look at it here. You have to look at things. When you're going out in the summer, don't you look at the looks of the person first? You do. Yeah, she said yes. Looks are important, you guys. So you have to look. Because that was the first thing. Isn't it the first thing? You know, because you don't know anything about the person. You see, oh no, No, God. So looks are important, so you have to learn to look not only for your partners but also for the anatomy, okay? So right here, look at what is this tendon? What is this tendon? Which tendon is this? Flexor? Digitorum? Profundus. Profundus. In the foot it was the same. Profundus, remember? So the same thing, taking origin from there and from the foot. Imagine, where do you think the lumbricus are inserting to? I want you to tell me, where is it inserting to? Yeah. Extensor expansions. That is where your lumbricus in the foot inserted. So these do. They go into the bone, but through the extensor expansions, through the lumbricus insert, you know, through the extensor expansions, you know, into the bone, ultimately it goes. And from the foot, if you remember, how was the innervation for the lumbricus in the foot? Was it one nerve or two nerves? Two nerves. So here, what do you expect? Two. Which two? Median and ulna. And so which will be the median, which will be the ulna? We count from the thumb side. 1, 2, 3, 4. So this and this by what? The first and, you know, second, you know, by what? Median. Logic. You see, logic or your preview or whatever, but you knew it. And so here is the median nerve, and so these two are your ulnar nerve. And these two are the ulnar nerve and the median nerve. What is the action? What is the action? The lumbricus, from their name, you can't figure out the action. So what is their action? Flex what? Flex metacarpophalangeal joints and extend interphalangeals. Flex metacarpophalangeal. This is metacarpals. And this is the phalanges here. Flex the metacarpophalangeal joints. And also, how can they can extend the interphalangeals? How? Because of the insertion to the extensor expansions. Because of the insertion into the extensor expansions. And that brings me to the adductor pollicis. The adductor pollicis, just like the adductor muscle, in the foot, we have just one adductor muscle here, and so it has, just like in the foot, it has two, you know, heads here, and inserting to the distal phalanx of the thumb, adducting. Adductor muscle of the hand is important because, you know, the grip, if you can't adduct the thumb, when you go to grip something, it's not going to be easy, you know, if you can't adduct the thumb. So adductor pollicis muscle is important. You need that not only for adducting the thumb, but also, you know, for gripping something. Because all these muscles, when you think of all the extensor muscles, all the extrinsic muscles, that generally speaking, all the extrinsic muscles that are coming into the hand, what they are for what? What is their general function? Gripping, grabbing. And fine, you know, the intrinsic muscles, what are they responsible for? This is again general terms, very general terms. The fine movements, writing and doing, or these fine movements are the intrinsic muscles. Fine movements are the intrinsic muscles, okay? Flexion, extension, whatever, with the interossei we will come to, okay? So then the next would come, you know, to the interossei. Now when you're going to look at the interossei, there is a disagreement about their numbers, okay? There is Morandali is what we will accept. Morandali says there are 3 palmar interossei and 4 dorsal interossei. But I can show you diagrams where they show 4, but we are not going to follow that. We have to follow, you know, the textbook. And so four dorsal in the rosy eye and three palmar in the rosy eye are what we have there. Okay? All the inner rosy eye from, you know, your foot, experience with the sole of the foot. What nerve do you think here should be innervating all the dorsal and palmar interossei? Which one? Ulna. Yes, that's right. Ulna nerve is innervating. So what is innervating the adductor pollicis? Adductor pollicis is here, you know, by the side of the thumb. Adductor pollicis. I tricked you, didn't I? You know, because I said it's by the thumb, so you went for the medial. It's ulna. Just like in the foot. Ulna. Ulna nerve, just like the lateral plantar nerve. Like the lateral plantar nerve of the foot. Lateral plantar nerve is thin nerve, but it has extensive distribution, remember, in the sole of the foot. Very similar to that. The ulna nerve, when it comes here is the ulna nerve. That's the deep branch of the ulna nerve. And this is going here. Median nerve you see here, but now there's a communication between the median nerve and the ulnar nerve. But I don't want to throw you with that information, but it is there. Okay, clinical practice, you may want to keep that in mind, but not for an exam. For an exam, we keep the ulnar and the median separate. But for your clinical practice, you want to keep in mind that the median nerve and the ulnar nerve in the palm, they have communication. The median nerve and the ulnar nerve in the forearm also, they have a communication. So situations or questions where, you know, you could use that information when you're trying to diagnose, you know, some cases. Now, I know I cannot, you know, finish up the palm. What we'll do is we'll finish up the arrangement of structures in the dorsum, and then I'll take you through the radial, median, and ulnar nerve lesions. And that is, you know, important for you to know. And thank you. And today's Tuesday. So Thursday, after finishing that, I should, when you come, to go to the class. Okay. Yes, I don't know how many yet. We do have some.